Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts.
Mr. Ben Arrington.
How's it going, Ben Arrington?
Ben Arrington, Mister. I'm giving myself the Mister bit now.
Mister, and I am Luke Condor with a K. Get it right. That's double barreled. And with a C.
Double.
So, how's it going, man?
Good.
You've got stuff to do later, right? You're busy cracking.
There's a little bit of football on later that I want, and I'm off out to have a little gander at. No, I'm not going to watch it live. I'm going to watch it on a different screen than I usually would.
In a pub.
Which is. Potentially, yes. It's an event.
Nice. Okay. What? So.
Very nice.
England.
England versus Brazil. Friendly.
Okay. Oh.
It's only so friendly, powerful. Mate. It's only friendly. Don't get angry about it. It's a friendly.
So, let's start with some other horror stuff. Other horror guff. Have you seen any cool stuff? Have you done any cool stuff other than football?
Other horror guff. I haven't done any horror. You know, we've discussed this already. I've done a bit of horror.
It sounds like someone's like had a poo upstairs on the floor. Horror.
I've done an absolute horror.
Actually, the King of Wimbledon. You know, he's pointing. I imagine he has that face and he says, "I've done a horror."
We might need to give this some context. We went to a comic convention in Wimbledon this weekend, and we met a man, a self-proclaimed King of Wimbledon, who wears a lot of... He's like a pearly king.
Yeah, yeah.
He wears a lot of bling, and he's in some interesting outfits. Find him on Twitter, King of Wimbledon. That might be the Twitter handle, but he's quite terrifying. And I mean that with the utmost respect for him.
I might write a fan fiction, like a horror story with the King of Wimbledon in it.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. Don't make him evil. He's a good guy.
No, yeah, he's cool. He's a hero.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Any horror guff? I went to a 30th anniversary screening of Predator, which I guess you're going to call... That's a horror film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Action,
that's
horror.
My favorite. That's kind of my favorite horror, that like subgenre of horror, that dark sci-fi horror. Like Alien or...
Yeah, so it was just at my local cinema, and they had like a load of props. Not props that were necessarily used in the film, but props of different Predator heads stuff.
The coffee machine.
They had two guys. yeah.
Mop.
They had a mop and they had a coffee machine, and that was it. There was two guys dressed as very strange looking predators. They looked like a cross between Predator and like the My Chemical Romance Black Parade album when they had those jackets.
Really?
I just didn't really know what was going on, and someone offered me the chance to have a photo of them, and I turned it down.
Nah, I'm okay, mate.
I just went, nah. They were stood there quite lonely. They look quite lonely.
I'm quite happy looking at this mop.
Yeah. This mop still works. Still sucks up stuff. Really good. Yeah, so I saw that.
Predator hair in the mop head.
Oh, yeah. I reckon it'd do really well. Yeah, so that was cool because you got to see Predator on the big screen, full of like absolute fanboys who were like shouting along with the quotable lines. Oh, get to the chopper, ain't got time to bleed, all that stuff. Yeah. A round of applause at the end for everybody, you know, loving it. That may be gone.
Son of a bitch. That must have gotten a chorus, right?
Yeah, I think it did. I did witness one of the strangest things I've witnessed while at cinema. There was a guy in the row in front of me. He wasn't directly in front of me. He was just offering my peripherals. And he stood up the whole time.
He must have...
He must have back issues, but I was confused because he didn't bother me because he wasn't in my way, but he was still in my peripherals.
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, what are you doing, man? And he sat down a little bit and then he stood up for the rest of the time. I thought, weird. It made me go and watch Predator 2 just to see if it was half as good as I remember it being, and it's not. I didn't really like it.
I'm kind of like dubious about watching it again if it hasn't aged that well.
It was just a bit ridiculous. So I think Predator, the original, is like almost perfect. It's just so good. It's so cheesy. It's so over the top, but it's great. You know what I mean? Whereas Predator 2 just felt cheesy and over the top, but not great. Yeah, makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I finished Stranger Things. It took me a little while. Obviously, it's been out for over 2 weeks, but I finished it.
We might do an episode on that, right? Maybe do an episode on that next week. Yeah,
we could potentially do an episode on that if you're game.
Yeah, sure. I finished it a couple of weeks ago, so I may have to rewatch it all.
Oh, that's
no, don't
do that to yourself.
No, yeah. Well, Horror Guff, I watched The Burning on Shudder. The Burning is an 82 slasher. It had a really cool poster, and that's why I watched it. Makeup effects by Tom Savini, who did the makeup effects on Day of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. Is he's in From Dusk Till Dawn as well. Is that right?
Yeah, he is. He's one of the...
He's a guy with a cock gun. and the whip.
No, I don't remember the cock gun and the whip. But,
you don't remember the cock gun? It's been a long time. The barrel is the shaft.
Since I've used the cock gun.
The barrel is a shaft and the balls are like two little
no, we need to watch that again. Yeah, we need to watch that on this show. Maybe I don't know.
And also when he uses the whip, he's actually using the whip in real life, because he's I was about to say classically trained with the whip then.
In makeup effects and whips.
And whips. He's good at makeup and whips, which is the two things you need if to survive a vampire apocalypse.
Yeah. There was The Burning is a guy. It's like a camp. It's Friday 13th. So basically, there's a camp, like a summer camp. There's some kids there. You'll recognize some of them now because they've gone on to be like in films, proper films and that. And the guy who gets burned at the start of the film comes back to kill everyone. Doesn't really have a proper motivation other than the fact that he's like mentally, physically scarred now, and he just wants some revenge. And he's got like shears, garden shears that he stabs him with and cuts fingers off and stuff.
That's pretty nice.
But it was pretty good. It was surprisingly good, actually. Actually made you care about the kids that I wasn't expecting to like them that much before I saw them get slaughtered.
Was this like early 80s or
mid 80s, early 80s? Yeah, probably the earlier side of 80s, actually. Yeah, but it was all right. It was better than thought. The make effects were pretty good. High Tension. I've just finished reading Dean Koontz's Intensity book, and I mainly wanted to watch this because I've heard that this was kind of a ripoff of Intensity. And there's some people I was reading about it, and some people are like, no, it's like just follows the same sort of idea. There's a lot of films that do that, a lot of TV shows. But no, this is like beat for beat. Like the first 50 minutes are exactly the same. Like, they're just different names, different language. But like the way like...
Different language is French?
It's French, yeah. It's like a French ultra-violent sort of... film. I know Tommy Draper in the Facebook group really likes this film. It's also known as Switchblade Romance. It was a good film, but like it was also a good book, and it annoyed me a bit because the guy, apparently Alexander Ahad, the director, never really admitted to the fact that he has because the way the book works is like it makes everything so intense, like the way a girl's hiding from a killer under the bed, and like there's all these like little details where she like dries the sink to make it like she's not been in there and stuff. And this film does it, like, every single little bit like that. I don't know how he expected he was going to get away with it. But,
I don't think I told you. I've never actually read any Koontz.
It's all right. And this is my first time. It's all right. Not too bad.
It's your first time. Koontz virginity.
My first
taken.
Koontz. Yeah.
Ripped away from you.
Popped my Koontz. And then I watched They Live. It's on Amazon Prime at the minute. So it's just another John Carpenter classic that I just wanted to watch And it was great. It was everything I wanted it to be.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've seen They Live. I feel very familiar with a lot of the visuals from They Live. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I've seen it. If not, I need to. Well, I need to rewatch it anyway.
There's like a
really long fight sequence, isn't there?
15 or 20 minutes. But it's one of those fight scenes where, like, they'll like punch each other. Like, it's Rowdy Piper who plays the main guy.
Yeah.
And it's like a bit of like a wrestling match. So like, he'll punch the guy and then it'll like choke slam or like suplex
him
or something.
They do some moves to each other, don't they? Yeah.
Like suplex them. And then the guy on the floor and then Roddy Piper will get up and then he'll catch his breath. And then you'll think it's over. And then I'll go, and then get back up. And that'll happen like between
isn't
the two
it like,
so many
isn't it
times.
Like Roddy Piper's character and like his mate in it. They just have a bit of a Barney and then just have a bit of a fight.
Well, yeah, so he's trying to get his mate to wear the glasses. I think it kind of has a message. It's like people don't want to know the truth, but it kind of forces him to wear the glasses that allow him to see what's really going on in the world.
What's the famous line as well? I came here to kick ass and chew gum and I'm all out of...
Chew
glass. I came here to chew glass. And
I'm all out chewing gum. Found some glass though.
My dad. A 20-minute fight sequence.
Yeah, my dad used to say that all the time, and I never knew where it was from, and I don't even know if he knows where it's from.
What, chew glass?
One of the classic dad sayings, isn't it?
Yeah. So your dad said that and you don't think he knew it's from They Live?
Not the glass line. The other one, the bubblegum line. Yeah.
The bubblegum one.
He said that all the time. He said that like at Christmas, like we're all in the living room at Christmas morning, getting ready to unwrap the presents, and he came in with a cup of tea and went, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum. Put them all out of bubblegum. Just something he says all the time.
That's not related to Christmas. And then who's kicking ass on Christmas Day? You know what I mean? No one is chilling out.
It's just my dad likes to kick ass, I guess, and chew bubblegum. But he's always out of bubblegum.
I'm kicking the festive ass. I'm always out of bubblegum. Exactly. He should stock up. He should stockpile the Wrigley's.
I take some with me now.
Other chewing gums are available.
In his mouth. Airwaves.
Oi, it's like Vicks Vapor Rub. Yeah. It's like eating that. Disgusting.
Yeah.
Tangent.
So, yeah. Okay, so I know you've got a football game to kick ass at you.
Forget a football game, man. Okay. Forget the football game. The football game will wait. It won't.
What football game? Yeah, football games, they don't do that. Hang on a sec, guys. Ben's doing a podcast.
Wait. I'm doing a podcast. That's all right.
Okay.
I'm not too bothered.
So we're doing number 20 on the list today. It's a classic. It's Psycho. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Psycho. Okay.
In that voice for the rest of
Woman X, Psycho. Bloody crazy. Psycho is a 1960 American psychological horror film directed and produced by Alfred Hitchcock. Never heard of him. Starring Anthony Perkins.
Is that quadruple barreled?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I mean, get over yourself. Starring Anthony Perkins, Janet Leigh, John Gavin, Vera Miles. And was based on a 1959 novel of the same name. Didn't know that. Did not know that. The film centers on the encounter between a secretary, Marion Crane, who ends up at a secluded motel after stealing some money from her employer, and the motel's disturbed owner-manager, Norman Bates.
Yes, so this is what the Empire Film guys have to say about it. Imagine a trip to see Psycho in 1960. It's deliberately oblique marketing, fronted by Hitchcock himself, would have prepared you for a motel to feature prominently, but not much else. But it's called Psycho, so you're going to expect some sort of horror film. The opening 20-odd minutes must have seemed like a pretty standard noir setup, with Janet Leigh eloping with a bunch of money and the tantalizing possibility of a new life that lasts precisely as long as her next trip to the shower. Then came the full-bore shock of that brutal knifing, each stab driven home by Bernard Herrmann's jarring score, unexpected and almost entirely without precedent. Audiences must have wondered if it was Hitch himself, in the nicest possible way, was the real psycho here.
Who's giving him the nickname Hitch? I've never heard that once before.
Empire. They've got an A in film studies. They can.
You can't just call Alfred Hitchcock Hitch.
I would have gone the other side of it. Oi, cock.
Al. Oi, cock.
All right, cock.
Hey, all right, cock. don't call me that.
97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.5 on IMDb. I didn't quite ask the Facebook group properly. I think I just said I was watching it, and Tommy Draper said, still powerful.
He didn't mean the film. He just meant your scent.
Still powerful.
Still powerful.
I've got the what's the spray called?
Lynx Africa.
I didn't mean that, but that's good. I like that one. I like the Lynx chocolate. Anyway.
Yeah, delicious.
Edward Harvey said, before shooting the last shot of The Sitter, which is his short film, he showed Noah, this little boy from his short film, who played Tommy, is the character that Noah plays in this short film that it just made.
It's a confusing face.
The still, so he showed the little kid who's in Ed's film, the still of Anthony Perkins doing a creepy smile. The kid does exactly that smile. It's very creepy. You should watch his short film. It's on the Facebook group. So, anyway, initial thoughts? Have you seen this before?
Yep. Yeah, I've seen this before. Don't know how many times I've seen it. That's not important, is it? Iconic. This is one of those films, also, that despite being a 1960 film, which, you know, is not always that good for me, I think in terms of, like, pacing and style and sort of, like, the way the film's set up, it feels very modern, doesn't it? It feels... It's, like, a very modern setup. And it feels like one of those sort of quite sort of like tightly knit thrillers that we sort of get from, I don't know, from certain directors these days. But that's obviously just because old cock is the master.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like this. I think obviously one of the most iconic themes, or well, there's quite a few themes in within the score that keep repeating during different parts of this film. And I think it is pretty. It's pretty iconic, and some great performances, genuinely like creepy, scary moments. I mean, I don't know how much better it would have worked in colour, because I think, didn't Alfred Hitchcock shoot in black and white on purpose, just so he didn't, so it wasn't so gory?
Really? I don't know that.
But I don't think it, I mean, you don't really see that much gore anyway. There's like a couple of blood stains, a bit of blood going down the plug hole. That's about it.
That's about it, yeah.
That body? Yeah, I mean, this was good. Obviously, it is a great twist as well. I mean, it's obviously one of the most well known twists. But yeah. if you didn't know the twist, I can see how meticulously it's put together to make it look like this twist isn't coming. If that makes sense,
they were dead the whole time. It's like a Sixth Sense style. Like, it would have been that shocking. Yeah,
it would have been that shocking. I don't think any new audience member in 1960 would have probably got it.
I would say, like,
before it happened,
because we know the twist in it, I actually found that quite effective, because I was surprised by how much I like this film. Like, I think I've seen it once when I was like seven-ish, you know, super young, when it doesn't really make any sense. It's on in the background, but this is the first time I've like actually sat down and watched it, and I really loved it, and I really liked Marion's character, and it elicits a lot of sympathy for her throughout the film. And then kills because you know that's going to happen. Like, you know the shower scene's coming up. Well, I was like, oh my god, it's like super tense.
It's the false protagonist thing, isn't it? Which I think isn't done very often. But when it is done, you know, it is always memorable. It's always one of the things. So you see a character constantly in the marketing for something, and then suddenly they don't last very long in the film. I mean, just a couple of examples I can think of. Drew Barrymore in Scream. I believe she was like the big face on the poster. And she was in the opening scene. She dies like in a few minutes.
5 minutes, yeah. Country for Old Men, I think of. Like, what's his face? Josh Brolin. He's like the main character.
He lasted a while, though.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I thought he was the main dude.
He dies off screen.
He dies off screen, exactly, yeah. What the fuck happened to Josh Brolin?
Metal Gear Solid 2 on PlayStation 2. And all the advertising, all the trailers, you're a Solid Snake on the like oil rig, and then bang, suddenly about an hour into the game, you're riding.
I didn't sign up to play some androgynous blonde-haired man with a knife.
All I remember doing as Raiden was doing cartwheels naked.
Yeah,
you remember this moment?
Naked.
There's a moment where you do cartwheels naked.
That's a question.
Where?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Very nice.
I remember loving that game, though. Regardless,
can we also quickly mention that there was a remake of Psycho, wasn't there?
Yeah, with Vince Vaughn.
With Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche. Yeah, that's it.
I've not seen it. I decided not to bother.
I've just been looking at bits and bobs of it today. I mean, it looks like almost exactly the same film.
Oh yeah, sorry. But... yeah, so I do know it is shot for shot. It was an experiment to see if it would work, and apparently it doesn't. Apparently they decided it didn't quite
work. It's strange, isn't it? That is very strange.
It's Vince Vaughn before he was, you know, a big comedy actor.
How many times has a film been remade, like, shot for shot? So it was 1998.
Yeah. I don't know how to Google that. How many times?
How many times the film? And it was directed by Gus Van Sant.
Yeah, Gus Van Sant, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen a Gus Van Sant film? I bet you have, but not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen, like, Paranoid Park, Milk.
Yeah.
Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. That's a great
interesting film. Oh, My Own Private Idaho as well. That's good.
There was one River
Phoenix. Yeah. Keanu Reeves.
There's one I watched with Matt Damon and Casey Affleck, and they're lost in this national park, and they're walking because they're just trying to find a way out. And the shots were like 25 minutes long, and there was no dialogue, and it's just them walking. And it was there to like make you sort of sympathize with the situation, but my God, it was difficult to watch. Like, it just was never ended. But
what was it called?
I can't remember.
Thanks to you. I'm only joking. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Right. You ready then should we delve into the story a little bit more?
Let's delve into the story of Psycho.
So, key players, we've got Anthony Perkins, who plays the infamous Norman Bates. Vera Miles plays Lila Crane. Why is she second in the billing? Janet Leigh plays Marion Crane. This is the second film in a row we've seen her in. She was in The Fog for a little bit. So Vera Miles plays the sister of Lila Crane. It's weird. When you watch like old films like this and you see people in their prime, do you know what I mean? Like mid-20s, late like early 30s, and I think... And you see that, and then you realize they're dead or something. But then you realize they're dead now, and it makes you feel like, oh my God, time.
Yeah, time that is passes. Weird. Time is a shithole. That's not a real. That's not. Time passes like grains of sand for the. Yeah, I know what you mean. When you see someone in their prime.
That's a shithole. Go on.
When you see someone in their prime and you look at the film, you're like, God, I'm really living it here. Yeah. But then you know, when you realize they've been dead ages, it's a bit weird to think when they were making that film, you know, the concept of death was
so much in front of them. Like, just wasn't, they weren't worried about dying.
Oh, yeah,
you know, it's and weird. Yeah,
it must be weird to think maybe one day we'll make something, and in 50 years after we've died, someone will watch it
and they'll feel bad.
They'll feel bad for us.
Is this shit on, Mr. Hawking?
They'll be looking at us now in our prime, well, me, and they'll go, bloody heck, dead, long dead. Who would have thought Luke Conner would have died like that as well?
A day later. Who would have thought it? Obviously not him. Anyway, so who else we got? John Gavin plays Sam Loomis. He is sort of Janet Leigh's...
Bit of crumpet.
They're not adulterers because I think neither of them are married or anything, but they're doing the dirty.
Just proper non-committal, aren't they?
Non-committal, yeah. Martin Balsam plays private investigator Milton Arbogast. He's quite an interesting character with a big face. And there's quite a lot of characters. We'll talk about them as we go through, but they're the main people that you need to know. But anyway, yeah. So. The opening credits I thought were pretty excellent by Sal Bass. Yep. You kind of see that sort of style, that Hitchcockian style, like used and taken in various sort of pastiches now, but like just, it's quite effective. And the music's amazing right at the start, very tense. And then we're introduced to Sam Loomis and Marion Crane. They're the two, they're sort of having off a bit. What's her name? Marion Crane. Janet Leigh has got like Tomb Raider 1 boobs, like polygon boobs. I think it's the style of the bra they have at the time. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I didn't think it at the time, but now you've said it.
Why is the film all pixelated?
She has got Tomb Raider 1 boobs. Still got you off there, didn't it? You're not a monster. Yeah. So they're having it off in her lunch break, aren't they? And she's even got a sandwich on the bedside table, which I was like, did she get that sandwich out to eat prior to the sex and then got distracted? Or was she putting it there for an immediate take-in of calories after she's...
We're going to need that later, that ham and cheese. We're
definitely going to need it.
Yeah.
Ham and cheese.
So they're talking like, I think they want to... It's quite witty the way they... all the dialogue's really witty. It's quite funny. It's quite light. It never felt like it was that dark film just yet. I think it sort of leads you in like a false sense of
security. This was a part of the film like I completely forgot about. Like any sort of setup in my head when I think about the film Psycho, it kind of starts at the point when she arrives at the motel. I didn't really completely forgot how much comes before.
Yeah,
how much
there like is to 40 set up. 40 minutes or something. Yeah, it goes on for a while. But I really liked all this stuff. I mean, so Marion, they kind of want to get together. They want to get married. I think there's a bit where Sam says, oh yeah, I've got alimony to pay. You're going to lick my stamps that I send me alimony checks? And then she goes, I'll lick your stamps. And there's not a lot of weird noir sort of wordplay like that in the start of it. Later on, Marion goes to work. I don't know, she works as a banker or something? What does she do?
She's like a secretary for somebody. Like some sort of property development thing, or I don't know. Because I think somebody dropped off a cash payment for a property of like 40 grand and her boss asked her to deposit the money in the bank. Wink, wink.
yeah.
And then she's like, oh, can I take the rest of the afternoon off? Like some layabouts when she's just been
bloody, getting... She's just been getting laid. And now she's going to get laid off if she didn't turn it around. But
I don't think she cares. Because she's 40 grand up.
Yeah, well, she's got one of those money headaches. You know when you've got money all of a sudden you kind of like I need to go home.
I've never had one of them, Luke.
Why, what's the
never had one.
Yeah, me neither. What's the issue you're having? Woman problems. And I didn't say that. But
oh my god.
So anyway, so she goes she basically got this money problems.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
She goes, 40 grand, I could go and get a boob job. Sort these two men one boobs. Sorry. Yeah. Silly that is. Sorry.
Yeah. You'd be ashamed, Ben. Anyway, so the 40 grand, the idea is she's supposed to take it to the bank on the Monday morning or something. Like, she's supposed to be off for the weekend, and the Monday morning she's going to put it in the bank.
And she just keeps it in like a little crappy envelope.
It's like half open as well. I don't know why the boss would like give her 40 grand and say, you keep that for the weekend and then put it. Like, it's just tempting her.
Keep it warm.
Keep it warm, yeah.
If you had to keep 40 grand for the weekend, babysit it.
Yeah.
How long before you
elope with the money? Get married.
Elope with the money, or like go out and buy a Lovely pair of cowboy boots.
It'd be
and a Stetson.
The time from me getting the money and me getting a lovely pair of cowboy boots would be quite short.
Yeah. Here's the money.
Prime.
Where did you get those cowboy boots?
Amazon Primed later that day, 6 o'clock delivery.
Oh, they're one size too big. That's all right.
Yeah.
Stuff them.
It's what happens now. So yeah, she goes. I think she immediately runs away with the money. She sort of
pretty much.
So she goes home because she's got a headache, and then she's driving. She's just driving now. She's going to drive off to where Sam Loomis lives or works or something like that. Apparently, it's quite far away. And then this is the most horrific part of the film, I thought. As she's driving, she's supposed to be home ill in bed with a thermometer in her mouth and a gob. She sees a bus walking over crossing the road, and then she waves to him. And then he looks back.
She waves to him?
Yeah, she waves. Well, she does like a nod, like, oh, hi. And then she goes, oh, and then the music goes, bam, bam, bam. Like, it's really intense.
Bam, 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 bam.
Have you ever seen, has that ever happened to you? You've been ill and your boss has caught you?
I don't think so, but I know what you mean. Like you've called in sick, you're ill, and you're like, oh, quit. Got a nip to Asda for a bit, and you get distracted in Asda. You're in the games aisle, and you're busy buying the latest Call of Duty, and you're like, can't wait to get over and play this. And suddenly, boss just clocks you in the line, and you go, all right.
Yeah.
You look really healthy, and you do a jig. And you...
I was ill when I woke up, and then I got better.
Yeah.
I got better.
Do you do ill voice if you call in sick?
No, I do kind of like tired voice, which is fairly like what my voice is like anyway. But like, it's, you know, it's a little bit quieter. It's like, hi, mate, yeah, so I'm not feeling too good today. Well, what do you do?
Hello.
I'm not feeling too good.
I'm really not feeling well today.
Who is that?
Help me.
Or I get like a bit complacent with it, and I go, "Hello, all right, how you doing, mate?" And so I'm really, oh no, I mean, oh sorry.
If they ask you, say you're high on Lemsip.
Oh, I'm high on Lemsip. I've had it all. Been doing lines of it.
Snorting it. This happened to Kat. So in London, when we lived there, she worked in a cafe. She was ill. She was generally ill. And then I got her to come meet me at the park for a chill in the sun. I fell asleep on the park. And then Kat's boss... Yeah.
Did you just say, I fell asleep on the park?
Yeah. Well, it's that's what people did in London.
Fell asleep
homeless
on,
people. Bums.
Fell asleep on the park. I was led right on the park. Yeah, and what happened? Her boss came along. He was the homeless man next to you.
And then Kat's boss came along, said, oh, are you feeling better? And then she said, yeah. And then she went away. And then that music played. Bam, bam, bam. And it was super tense. Yeah.
Did she get told off?
No, I mean, what could he say, really?
You liar!
We can't prove it.
You're a liar!
You could say that, but you can't prove it.
Well, that's where it gets it. That's where you get into it. Take it to a tribunal if you want to sort it out.
Yeah. Okay. So she's driving. The boss doesn't say nothing. She falls asleep at a car at some point. She wakes up to see a policeman staring through the window, and like, the camera's right in his face. All this stuff happening now is like she's instantly feeling pressure and guilty. She stole all this money. Everything she sees around is making them more tense. The music is there to sort of add to that. When the policeman like is asking where she comes from, what she's up to, she doesn't want to answer his questions, just wants to get along with it. And as she drives off, I think he says something about a license plate, so she says, I'm going to get a new car or something, goes to a little garage, a used car thingamajobby, first thing in the morning. And then the guy, the used car salesman, what did he say? He says, like, look, this is what I say to the first customer of the day. First customer in the morning is the most trouble. I don't want no trouble. Like,
yeah.
Oh, fucking hell. What do you want?
Like, she's trying to just swap her car over, like sell her car basically and get a new one. And he's like the worst salesman ever. He's like trying to make it not
really?
Happen. He's like, really? Are you sure? You don't want to go away for a couple of days and think about it?
Yeah.
Also, she gives her car over and gets a different car, but she got to pay $700. I'm like,
well, I mean,
do what?
Slightly newer, maybe. I don't know.
Do one. I would have done better to do that. Also, the police officer turns up across the road and he's staring. I'd be like, if that happened to me in real life, I'd go over to the police officer and say, what are you looking at, mate? What are you bloody looking at? You want some, do you? Want some? What are you bloody looking at?
Also, like, what is he not supposed to, like, have, like, a route? I'm sure, like, policemen have places to go. They don't just follow. He's the real psycho in this film. Following her around. And then, like, it's almost like, so the old watcher, the used car salesman, his
mechanic,
and the policeman, they watch her drive off in the new car. And it, like, it's super tense music. Without the music, I don't think this film would be anywhere near as sort of tense as it is. But then at this point, you're still not sure. I mean, we know what's going to happen. But, like, if you're watching this for the first time, you still wouldn't be sure that what they're.
I think Mr. Cock, Mr. Hitchcock, does a really good job of sort of like sowing those little seeds of like where everybody, you're unsure, like, who's the psycho? Like, if you saw this for the first time, you knew nothing about it, but like, who's the psycho going to be? So far, policeman, probably. It could be any of these guys. You know what I mean? It could be anyone.
Yeah.
So you're kind of feeling that paranoia with Marion.
And then
she's feeling that paranoia.
As she's driving away and it's like pissing down in rain, it's nighttime. Like, she's playing through. I thought it's really, really well done. Like, she's playing through in her mind what her boss is going to say over the next coming days and like what everyone's going to say. And she's like, I don't know, it's like she's doing exactly what we all do when we like playing out the worst scenario and already feeling like incredibly guilty about it or incredibly sort of put out by it. And then in the rain, she comes across Bates Motel. And then you know. Well, we know. It's about to get real.
Bates Motel, run by Master Bates. It's kind of a little bit off the beaten track a bit. She's not like on a main road or anywhere. She's a little bit out of the way, which I'm assuming she's done on purpose. Does she really give any sort of reason?
I guess just sort of get away from the police people a bit. Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
So there's a motel and there's like a huge sort of like country house overlooking the hotel. I mean, it's very iconic, this house, isn't it? Like the sort of shape and it almost like a bit of a Dracula's castle type of feel.
It's got that vibe, mate. Salem's, what's the house in Salem's Lot called? It reminds me of
I know what you mean. So when she meets Norman Bates, he seems like a lovely man.
He's kind of charming, isn't he? He's kind of like a really nice, like pleasant kind of guy. Yeah.
He's eating candy corn. He's just loving life. He's offering her a meal. He sort of tells her where the nearest place to eat is, a diner. But then he says he was making some dinner, so it'll sort of write out. Then he says he's having sandwiches and milk.
Sandwiches and milk.
Dipped in. I don't know. This is the initial moment I go, psycho. I mean, come on, psycho.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's having sandwiches and milk. They eat together in the motel. It's not the room, is it?
It's in the parlor room, so it's where the office is. There's a parlor room behind it. There's like stuffed birds and stuff. And he's talking about how he likes the taxidermy stuff, but he's a really weird guy because like he's kind of charming, and I think like the performance this guy has, and because we know sort of what's happening, what's going to happen here, well, we do now watching it here, but like it's a genuine sense of dread. Like I really thought. I don't know, you kind of know what's going to happen. And the guy who's playing Norman Bates, I think Anthony Perkins was, like, amazing. Like, his performance, like, later on in the film when he's nervous about trying to, he keeps, like, tripping up over himself, his story and everything, it's so well done.
Yeah, it wasn't like a one-dimensional psychopath. I mean, I say one-dimensional, but I think usually characters like this are given two sides, aren't they? So, obviously, the psycho side and the nice normal side, or maybe not the normal side, maybe just whatever. I think Norman Bates was given enough of he felt like he had a backstory. He kind of felt like he had layers. He was a lasagna man.
He was a lasagna man. Yeah,
he had a lot of layers to him. You know, he obviously talking about his
white
his
sauce,
mother.
Red sauce, yeah. Pasta,
bolognese, and repeat until repeat. Full.
Many layers. Yeah, so a lot of the layers were the same, just repeated. Yeah. But there was at least four of them. Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
go on.
So he talks about his mother, who he says is mentally ill and forbids him to have a life outside of her.
Yeah, so she's like, his mum's
well,
on the
it's too
right
late. You come. He's out the womb now, so he's outside of you. Let him live, for God's sake.
Get back up to your room. And not upstairs, she means. Back in the womb.
Back in the womb. I told you, Mum. It's impossible. It's physically impossible. Keep trying.
Head at least. Anyway. So they're having a right argument. His mum is like shouting at him. It's embarrassing because he's a man, like a grown man. Anyway, he starts to like her, I think. He starts to think
Marion's a nice lady, but obviously his mum is shouting, going. At this point, obviously, yes, we only hear the voice of his mum from outside the house.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's shouting, and she's a nutbox, isn't she? I mean, she's like,
yeah, fruitcake. Yeah, nutcake. Just trying to remember how this bit comes about now. So I think he likes her. I think he said they'll wake her up in the morning, and she says, I've got to go. I'm really tired. I'm gonna have a shower and get to bed. And then you kind of see it, the change in his mind. He looks a little bit sort of nervous suddenly for some reason, looks up to the house. He goes up. Marion has a shower. And then we all know how this bit goes. Did you find this bit quite scary? Like it's effective?
Yeah, I think it's like a combination of things. I think the anticipation of knowing something's coming, something bad's going to happen. Also, like that shower, the bathroom looks really like cold, almost like a abattoir or something. It just looks really cold and white, and just looks like, you know what I mean. It just doesn't seem right. It almost feels like somewhere someone might die.
It's weird as well because by this point we've been with Marion's character for 45 minutes or so, 50 minutes. Like she is the main character in the film. And then just to see her sort of die, kind of like brutally, the music sort of plays, it's the screeching, and she sort of falls over.
Yeah, so she's obviously bum, she's bum, having a she's having bum, a love.
Bum, bum,
bum, bum.
Bit of slap bass sort of pops it out of nowhere, and then Noah Bass is like playing to his mum, jazzing one off.
Jazzing one up. Yeah, so obviously she's having a shower and a shadowy figure appears behind the shower curtain looks like obviously an old lady's hair. That's what I mean, old lady hair.
Looks like
a little blouse, and then stabs the living bejesus. But obviously, yeah, she's stabbing her, but very, you don't see much.
I think he misses a lot for the first bit, and then she's holding his hand away, and then like towards the end, he sort of just catches her. Couple in the back.
She, the mother, not a very like efficient killer. A bit like, oh God, I'm going to bloody get you. Oh no, God, struggling a bit. Like,
When we see the mum later, not the actual mum, but I think people know the twist. Like when we see Norman dressed up as the mum later, he acts kind of weird. Like it's so bizarre.
Did
like
you just say? Ruined it for everyone.
Yeah. So the next sort of 10-15 minutes is Norman sort of hiding away.
Yeah, yeah. So this was quite interesting because obviously this is the kind of thing you rarely see in any sort of film where there's been a murder or a serial killer or anything like that. You don't really get to see the moments when someone like tidies up after. So obviously we're made here to think that Norman discovers the murder, assumes his mother is responsible. And he cleans up the crime, which takes a while. You know what I mean? It doesn't. It's not like he sort of
isn't like
quickly does it. It takes a while. It takes a while of on screen time as well, which is strange.
It reminded me for some reason of Breaking Bad. You know, in the first season, they kill that guy.
Yeah,
and he goes through the bath and like makes a mess everywhere. For some reason, it reminded me of them because how long it takes and how much effort is involved in cleaning up after.
I couldn't be bothered, could you? Do a murder. I'll just go, leave it.
He gets
is this blood? he meticulous. So he cleans up the crime and then he puts Marion's corpse in the shower curtain into her car and all of her possessions, including the money. If only he knew, we could have started a new life in Hawaii. He puts it all in the trunk of her car.
Yeah. And then puts it in I thought it was a tar pit because it's black and white. I was expecting like little dinosaur bones to sort of bubble up to the top or something. But
do you know what? I love a good tar pit.
I don't know. Are they real? Like tar pits? I've seen them in Futurama. And that's
I've seen him in Sin City. Do you remember the bit in Sin City with the tar pit and like Clive Owen ends up?
They swim out or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But where's a tar? If I want to go and have a look at a tar pit, where is one?
Well, I got it in like California, I guess. But I don't know if that's real. Like, I've never actually seen.
I want to go. Let's if they're real, let's go and find a tar pit and jump in.
I feel like there's one at like Universal Studios. And like that's it, like. But anyway, it's not actually a tar pit. It's like a swamp, but it's a very thick, dank.
It's yuck. Yeah. So yeah, gets rid of it, and then we cut away to a little while later. What was it, like a week later?
Yeah, something like
and
that.
And Marion's sister arrives and basically goes and finds Marion's bit of stuff, Sam, and starts questioning him to where her sister is.
And he's like, don't know, no idea, and then. All of a sudden, this other dude turns up. He's a private investigator, Mr. Milton Arbogast, and he's been hired by the guy whose money the 40 grand belonged to. And he's under the impression that she's taken 40 grand, come to see Sam, her boyfriend, and they were going to elope, run away or whatever with his money. But he's like, not seeing it, don't know. And then he doesn't believe it. Arbogast doesn't believe them at all at the minute. But then he goes to... How did he find a motel? He asks around. There's like a montage of him asking people.
Yeah. So he's pretty good as a private investigator, isn't he? Yeah. I mean, he is. He's good at what he does. So what does he do?
We don't hear him. We're just asking people at doors. And then he makes his way to the Bates Motel. And this is maybe my favourite scene in the film, when he's sort of like interrogating Norman Bates. But just by asking him questions... And Norman Bates, like the performance, the way he's sort of like tripping over his own logic, he's getting like kind of nervous as he talks.
Yeah.
It's really naturalistic the way he does it.
Because he seems like he's sort of crafting a fairly good story.
Yeah.
But then you don't really realize that not only that he is kind of saying contradictory things.
Yeah.
He mentions a couple that came. He says no one's been there for weeks. Then he mentions a couple that came and sort of were lost. So he is kind of contradicting himself. And this private investigator is good because without trying to pin anything on him,
yeah,
he just kind of is unpicking his story a little bit, just making him a little bit. And again, this ramps up the tension big time because you're like, don't push him,
yeah,
don't push him because he is gonna maybe snap and maybe stab you.
I really enjoyed this bit. And then so what happens? Norman mentions his mum, and Arbogast is like, oh, I want to see your mum. And then Norman's like, no, that ain't going to happen. And then Norman gets kind of angry at this point, and he starts to flip a little bit. And then Arbogast is like, no, I'm going to go. He phones Marion's sister.
Yep.
Tells her, look, there's this dude at the motel. She stayed there. He's weird. I think his mum spoke to Marion, so I'm going to go talk to her. And then he makes the mistake of going to the house.
Yep.
And then, yep. And then did this death scene remind you of anything? He falls down the stairs. So he goes up the stairs in the house, sees the old woman, and he gets attacked by a knife and pushed down the stairs.
Yeah, so he just goes to the top of the stairs and she comes out of another room. Again, this reminded me a little bit of like what Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where like the antagonist just kind of appears. You don't really quite see it coming, and then bang, just walks out of a doorway. And attacks immediately.
It reminded me of a game. Like you like walked into someone's sight, like line of sight.
It was like a fixed camera angle, like out of Resident Evil as well. Like it was right up in the top corner of the room. And so when someone just came in and she started stabbing him. Yeah. And this was a weird shot where he was kind of falling down the stairs, but it was like.
It reminded me of Omen. Like the way the woman falls off the stairs. I don't know what I'm doing because it looks like a dolly zoom, which is where you.
Yeah.
Zoom out but move the camera in at the same time, so it's like the frame sort of gets like flattened as you move it. Like, but I'm not too sure how to do that. I mean, if anyone listening knows how to do that weird zooming sort of like effect, it's really weird. I'd love to know how to do it.
It looks quite unnatural, but also interesting.
But it kind of works because I mean it kind of gives the effect of someone who is falling and it's sort of, you know, time's gone a bit weird and sort of flying past. But yeah, you were like 10 minutes before you got to go for your football game. Your football.
Don't worry about it. Don't put any sort of limit on this lovely chat about Sidecam.
Okay, cool. Well, okay, so Arbogast is dead. I don't know what they do to that body. Whenever we find out about that. So then the sister and Sam decide to, because Arbogast hasn't got in touch with him, and they go to where he went last, which was the house.
Yeah, well, don't they go to the local sheriff first?
They go to the local sheriff. But he's like, oh, yeah, Norman Bates. Arbogast went to see Norman Bates' mum. And then he's like, I don't think so. The mum crapped the biscuit 10 years ago.
Crapped the biscuit. She sliced the cake. She 20, how many years ago? Quite a while ago.
She tipped the bin like a decade ago. Yeah, 10 years ago, he says. She was found dead and...
deaf, dead, and full of dread and dumb. Yeah, well, you would be deaf if you were dead, wouldn't you? Wake up, listen to me!
With a boyfriend at the time. So apparently they buried him together or something, and Norman was distraught. But there's no mum. So then they're like, oh, that's weird, because there is a mum. So they go... Wait, does the cop go to see the house then yet, or
he says no? I think they conclude that Arbogast probably lied to them, found the 40 grand, and has just pissed right off. But they're still like not quite convinced, so they go to the motel, and then we see a scene where Norman is carrying his mum down the stairs. Yeah. Again, from that fixed Resident Evil camera angle, he's carrying down the stairs, and she's like, "Bloody hell, Norman, you're a rat mug."
That was a really good impression. And then, okay, the now comes to the end. So Sam and Lila decide, we're going to go down and we're going to see myself. We're going to find out. We're going to get to the bottom of this tin of biscuits. Biscuits in my mind for some reason.
Just crumbs at the bottom.
Yeah. Just crumbs. And then they find, they rent a room. Sam corners Norman and says, you've taken the 50 grand, haven't you? We know you like,
see, this is a bit weird because they kind of talk initially and they're like, we'll go in, we'll get a room as a married couple, and we'll just slowly and surely try and work out what's happening. But they just jump right in. It's like
10 minutes in, like, yeah.
We'll take a while and we'll have a little look around and we'll do this and that. And he goes, you're a psycho, aren't you? But grabs him by the face. Oh.
I don't know if he said, like, I don't think he thinks he killed it, does he yet? Or...
No, I think he just thinks that he's got the money somehow, or that knows where she's gone, or something like that, didn't it?
Yeah. So he's cornering Norman.
He's Lila's, basically distracting.
Yeah, yeah. Lila is having a sneak around the house, having a little perusal. I don't know why she's looking at books. Like, there's one bit where, like, she's going around the house, and, like, if you're looking for someone's mum, or, like, Marion, or, you know, if she's been kidnapped or whatever, like, she just starts picking up books. And just starts looking through some books.
She's a keen reader. She likes literature. What can you say?
Put that
she's
like, to reread to read oh, list.
I'm looking for my missing sister. However, what's that? I've not read that one.
Yeah,
oh, this looks good.
Well, the latest John Grisham, the latest Jack Reacher novel.
The latest Jack Reacher novel. What bothers Jack got himself into now?
And then, like, she's halfway.
She
from reading
sits down
the book.
And reads out of it. Yeah.
Just can't stop this page turner. And so Norman clocks on to that Sam's basically like keeping him. And then he goes, she's not gone to see my mother, has she? He knocks Sam out with an ornament.
A spinning elbow.
Spinning elbow. Superman punch to the noggin. And he runs up to the house. Lila sees it's coming to the house through the little window. She goes to hide in the basement. And that's where she sees Norman's mother. It's like a single light bulb. Swinging, and then she turns the chair, and then we reveal the mum's just like a corpse.
The mum has seen better days. She's just she's just a corpse. Lovely teeth, but all her eyeballs have been rotted away. She's got a lovely wig on. She's dead.
She's quite dead. And then Lila screams, knocks the lamp. The light, and it's like the light's going crazy. So it's very, very disturbing. Mm. And then Norman runs in, full in his mother's wig and knife. And he's like coming to kill her. It's kind of scary the way it works here. So he's coming to kill Lila with a knife.
Yeah. Sam, and he's acting like a kid all hyped up on like sugar and stuff. He's like, yeah. Hey, oh, I'm going to have you.
Well, like so Sam like grabs him from behind to stop him. And he has this kind of like weird freak out moment. He looks like how I look like when I'm eating Brussels sprouts. Because I always say don't put sprouts on my Christmas dinner, and they always manage to put one on there and I eat it.
and you don't realise that they're on there until you pick it up and eat it. You're like, what's this? Like a tiny cabbage. Oh no, you got me again. The 25th year in a row. curses.
So he just falls down.
He has a freak out where he's like pulling at, he's going out, and he's coming out of his clothes.
Yeah, he's like gurning and stuff, like he's had a spot of coke.
I think they're just struggling, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay, so then cuts to black, and then like we've got like the denouement part of the film where Norman's in prison, and there's like loads of people talking about. This is a weird part of the film, I thought. When a guy,
it was almost like. The guy just explains everything.
Just walks out really calmly. Well, you see. And he like talks about how, yeah, it's like all the exposition that we didn't need that much of, but it's a nice little monologue, I guess, but it was just strange.
Well, turns out he was a transvestite and something like that, doesn't
it? So yes,
he does say something like that.
Well, he says so in one part of his mind he is Norman Bates, and the other part of his mind, because he killed his mum and her boyfriend, I think he got jealous of him or something. And then because he couldn't deal with the guilt of the fact that he killed his own mum, his personality splits too. So one half is mum, the other half is Norman. And then one of the cops goes, tranny then. He's a bloody tranny. And then...
he's bloody tranny then. Oh, he's bloody mental, is he? He just goes...
I know. So basically, he's psycho. And then they like cuts to him.
Psycho. It's a good coping mechanism for him to... Yeah.
I do it all the time. If I kill a spider, I can't deal with it. So just a little bit of personality splits off. And then if you catch me in the right moment.
Flies.
On the ceiling.
Flies. Are you right out there, Luke?
Swinging.
The only way to tempt you down is with a sprout.
So then it ends with, so he says something like, Norman becomes attracted to a girl, the other part of personality comes out because she becomes jealous of Norman being attracted to another girl. It's really weird. But then it ends with like this most amazing sort of like little thing of Norman when he is 100% his mum now, isn't he? So he's no longer Norman Bates. He's full on Mummy Bates. And
Mummy Bates.
And then it just sort of ends with him smiling, saying, don't say anything, and they'll never figure out that you're not really mum, whatever her name is. And then I think he just decides he's not going to... I think he just goes, like, catatonic at the end, smiling. It's really weird.
Yeah, because he goes... And then a little fly lands on his hand, and in Mama Bates' voice says, I'm not even going to swat that fly, because I wouldn't hurt a fly.
Yeah.
And then he just gives it the look
wow,
of...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
That's a really great ending, actually, that final shot. Okay, so some trivia.
No, I'll have a bit of trivia, mate. Yes, please.
Okay, number one. Until her death, Janet Leigh continued to receive strange and sometimes threatening calls detailing what they would like to do to Marion Crane. True or false?
From who?
People. Creepos.
People. How'd he get her number?
I don't know.
Directory.
Direct. What do they call it in America?
Yellow pages. I don't know. True. Yes. Why not?
True. One letter she said was so grotesque that she passed it along to the FBI, to the agents, visited Lee, and told her the culprits had been located and they were never heard from again.
I told you not to send that letter to her, but you said. In fact, I think your exact words were, "Is this grotesque enough?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Probably not."
Polygon boobies.
I love polygon boobies.
Okay, number two. Hitchcock was so impressed with Herman's composition for the shower scene that he nearly doubled Bernard Herman's salary. Note the language, nearly doubled, which means he like went to do it and then went, no.
Wait, wait, like he nearly doubled it or he added some more to it and it was nearly double?
Okay, well, true or false first, and then we'll...
Yeah, true.
Well, apparently true. It's on Wikipedia. Yeah, it says... it just says, that shower scene, that he nearly doubled Herman's salary. So, like, if this makes any... Like, if he went, like, well, cut you, so nearly double get what you thought. Or he went, like, if this is so good, I'm gonna... And he goes, what are you gonna do? Nah. It's good, though.
I'm gonna double salary. Salad portion. Double your salad portion.
Extra croutons for Herman.
Why? I'm full up already. I'm all full up on
salad.
I had a Kinder egg earlier.
Yeah. Okay, so number three. You ready? On set.
Yes. Wasn't it yes or no? Yes.
On set, Alfred Hitchcock would always refer to Anthony Perkins as Master Bates.
I want it to be true more than I think is true. I'm gonna let my heart overrule my head. True.
True. Apparently.
What?
Yeah.
Is it?
So number four.
Oh, cock and masturbates. Well, yeah.
So number four. Similarly, Hitchcock. So we'd always get people to call Anthony Perkins masturbates. Hitchcock would always refer to himself as the pork pie sex machine and threatened to shower scene anyone who refused. Oh, shower scene, you so fast. That's what he used to say to people.
You'll be shower scene so hard, your shoes will fly out. I don't think... I want that to be true, but I'm going to let my head overwhelm my heart and say false. Pork pie sex machine. It was a sausage roll sex machine. That's the truth, wasn't it?
That's the one, yeah. Number five. The film has been rated and re-rated over the years from PG to PG-13 to PG-15 to a 5 out of 10 to a B-, and finally to a whopping 5 dicks up in Hitchcocky and Cox magazine, the porn magazine for fans of the cock, both itchy and hitchy.
Oh, 5 dicks up in the Hitchcocky and what?
That's
the highest score.
If you like Hitchcock, then you'll love new Hitchcocky and Cox magazine.
Hitchcocky and Cox magazine, true.
It's for fans of the cock, both itchy and hitchy. Okay, number six, because I couldn't
was
finish.
Was it true or not?
Oh, sorry, no. No, it really, really wasn't. Number six, because I couldn't really end on that, like, bollocks. Number six, Anthony Perkins was paid $40,000, the same amount of money that Marion embezzled.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that would be a nice little nugget, wouldn't it? A nice little factoid.
Little tasty nuggets.
True.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I thought I can't end on the Hitchcock and Cox magazine. I've got to put something actually quite interested in there.
That is interesting.
I think you got all of them right. You are...
Of course I did, mate. Of course I did. I don't know if I did, but of course I did.
You've earned the title of Cockmaster. So
I'd rather be known as Pork Pie Sex Machine.
And that.
That's right with you.
Yeah. I'll call you that from now on, sure. Anyway, just please don't shower scene me. Okay, ready? So we need to...
I will.
We need to rate the film. I'll let you take the reins.
Let me take the reins. It's iconic, isn't it, this film? It's iconic. I think as we're slamming into the top 20, we're going to be meeting these iconic films and enjoying them and realising why they're iconic. For a film that of this era that I probably would...
Yeah, this is off the cliff for you, right? Generally, like a film like this age. Yeah,
I think so. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. I thought the performances were great. I think direction was great, looked good. I felt that even though it was a plot I was incredibly familiar with, knew exactly where it was going, really, I still felt invested in it. B+.
B plus. Okay, cool. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. Like, I think you're right. I'm a bit worried that the next 20 films are all going to be so good. There's not going to be that much variation in the grades. Because, I mean, just by going by this one, like, I just really fucking loved it. And I really want to start watching more Hitchcock films now.
Hopefully we'll see some films that are good, but we hate.
Yeah.
For some reason. I don't know. Or maybe one of us. At least as long as one of us does.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably me.
But this is one of the few films on the list that we've watched. I'm surprised by how much I enjoyed it. Like, I think, like, Let the Right One In, It's Gonna Live In, if you haven't seen it before. I just really liked watching those films. And it surprised me. What about, have you had any of those yet? Where, like, you thought, I think I know what I'll feel like going into this film, but it's like, whoa, that's actually pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty sure. I can't think of one. I can't remember exactly what I graded Suspiria, but I think a few weeks after watching that, It stuck with me a lot more than I thought it was going to.
Maybe listen to the soundtrack.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously the soundtrack. Goblin. Goblin.
Okay, so my grade, I'm going to give this an A-. I thought it was amazing. Really, really fucking good.
You always got to go one more than me, ain't you?
Not always. But most of the time.
Not always, but most of the time. There's an Excel spreadsheet that we can refer to.
Yeah, we need to update that, I think. Okay, so the next week we will be talking either about Stranger Things Season 2, might be nice little venture, or the next on the list will be American Werewolf in London. So we'll see how we get on. So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovac Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star review in iTunes. Remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude.
Thank you, Luke, for also being a real horror dude pork pie sex machine.
All right.
all right. If that's what you want. All right, Ben. Okay.
Oh, I've done a horror.
Silly boy. I've done a horror.
Okay.
I'm about to do
one. I'm just going to go pork pie one up. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.